I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, ahoy hoy to the hoy hoy hoy, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
That comical intro should set the scene for this week's podcast. Because
I couldn't come up with anything on just short notice, but... I feel bad now.
It's not been a radically busy week in the world of tech news, in the UK, that is.
Well, you say that, but some Tory MPs have said some stupid things again.
They have, and we're not...
And about tech, sort of.
Sort of, but not mostly. I think that's key.
No. We are... All right, it has been a bad week.
There's been a lot of very interesting technology news, certainly. There's been Musk and Twitter and
but we don't really need to talk about that, do we?
And other things. Kate asks in the live chat, are tractors tech? Well, I think you're about to find out that even if they're not, there's a very compelling way to make them tech.
Have you seen a modern tractor? To describe them as anything other than tech is ludicrous. They are incredible machines that, by and large, drive themselves.
Yeah, they had...
absolutely remarkable.
A bit of talk about that came up in Clarkson's Farm, which I'm... looking forward to the return of, I have to say. I think that's one of the best things Jeremy Clarkson ever made.
It's true. It is true.
Well, before we diverge too much, I'm afraid we have to address the elephant in the room here, don't we, Ian? There's unfortunately a problem.
Hello, Nelly.
A problem occurred a little while ago, a few weeks ago, and I accidentally slandered somebody and... I need to apologize for this because I don't want to get sued. So I thought I would start off the show and bring it down. And this is what happened. I have to go according to the script here. I insinuated that my grandmother once wanted to have a shower with the newsreader George Alagaya. I've been reliably informed by my mother that that is not true. And actually... she fancied George Alagaya, and my mum told her that she should have a cold shower in order to get over the crush. So in my memory, this was quite some years ago, and in my memory, it was that my grandmother, God rest her soul, wanted to shower with George Alagaya. Not true. Needed to have a shower to get over the
somewhere George Alagaya is listening to this in the future, perhaps, and sort of doing that. You have never watched Arrested Development, but anyone will know the sad George Michael, and he'll be doing that.
Yeah,
because he thought that he had a fan who wanted to shower with him, and that's been cruelly taken away from him. So I don't know who you've wronged most in this Alagaya gate.
Well, I just feel it's in my interest as a journalist, as a grandson, as a human, that if I make an error and insinuate that a grandparent, deceased though she may be, once wanted to do something that in fact she didn't, it behooves me to correct that error. So I have done.
Well, I think that's fair, but I mean, you're not under legal obligation to do so because the dead don't have rights. So
this is true. This is true.
You know, they can't sue for particularly the laws that you're talking about, slander and, the other one. What's it called?
Libel.
It's
good that you don't know that word.
It's very good.
It's drilled into my head. Anyway.
Well, of course.
As we also had an interesting piece of feedback that came in last week from James. It's a very short email. The subject line was inflatable cars. Now, this is something that came up because I mentioned that wouldn't it be a good idea if cars were inflatable? This was in the context of driverless cars and collisions. James simply says, awesome suggestion. That's why we listen to your show. James.
Thank you. I'm not sure if it is, but it might be. And I'm not sure if that's an entirely sarcastic reply.
That's what I wondered.
I suspect it isn't.
I suspect it isn't. And Ian B in the live chat says it's not a bad idea. So...
I mean, I believe that things have been investigated, but it's very difficult to make a car inflatable.
I would imagine it's a challenge. And I imagine Volvo, famous, of course, for the safety of its family saloons, has probably explored the possibility and concluded that that essentially covering a car with one large balloon is not going to be as efficient as a good airbag and a, you know, braking system that functions.
I do now have some recollection of an idea to put airbags on the outside of cars, but I don't know whether I've dreamt that or not.
Doesn't seem like something terrible idea.
It sounds like a Tomorrow's World kind of thing, you know, where you'd have something in the bonnet that inflated if there was a pedestrian impact. But I don't know. It's probably too difficult to do.
Yeah. But I'm pleased that it at least struck a chord with one listener. If you have any other views, of course, anyone on inflatable cars, or indeed what else you would like to see inflatable or made inflatable in future, that would be fantastic. Ian in the live chat, a different Ian, Ian B, says a bouncy castle on wheels doesn't sound that hard. Well, challenge accepted, Ian. Off you go. Go and seek some venture capital funding. The private equity markets are rather, you know, a cavalier approach to controversial ideas right now, so you probably get the funding. But we'll come back to that. Later on in the show, of course, we are going to be talking about how a woman needed firefighters to be rescued from a toilet she dropped her phone in. If that doesn't set the scene for how little UK tech news excited Ian and I prior to recording, then I don't know what does. Let's start, though, with something you may have heard about. An MP told the BBC he's going to resign after admitting watching porn twice in Parliament. Now, and while that doesn't immediately strike anyone probably as a technology story, I think we have to remember, as I said, it's been quite an uneventful week. But there is a twist here. The MP in question said that it had been a moment of madness. Quote, "The situation was that, funnily enough, it was tractors I was looking at." Now, when I first read that, I honestly did laugh out loud. I did a lol, as you'd say.
Yeah.
Because in my head, he wasn't Googling tractor news or combine harvester innovations, but steamy X-rated tractor on tractor action. You know, which is not an unfounded assumption, I think. There is a woman in this world who married a Ferris wheel. There's a man in America who took a car for a lover. I actually watched a clip of him coming out to his father this morning. If you want to lose all faith in humanity, I suggest Googling that. But that's not what happened here. What happened here is even harder to get your head around in a way, weirdly. How, and this is a question for you, Ian, how, even in the wonderful world of the internet, can you get from a website about tractors, famously not that sexy, to hardcore super sex, famously quite sexy? Like, how do you transition from reading about, let's say, a John Deere 8 series, a model with e-auto power transmission, the first electromechanical split-path IVT with infinitely variable transmission that provides maximum reliability and durability, to also, purely, for instance, two ladies kissing a gentleman up the legs? I don't know how you do that.
It's made up.
Is that what you think?
Yes,
because I'm on the fence. I feel like it's been possible in the past to accidentally stumble onto something on the internet.
No, let me explain. If you go to a site that hosts adult entertainment, they very often have a warning. This is 18 plus. You'd know.
But what if it wasn't? This is the thing. I was trying to think of.
What you think he ended up on Imgur or something?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying.
Or Reddit.
I'm trying to think of: are there any pornographic websites that have, let's say, a typo of tractor in the name? Because I can't think of how you would. Because you know, a lot of websites, particularly you know, drive-by Bitcoin miners, they prey on typos to try and accidentally get you to. You know, to visit their link form. Rich in the live chat says maybe he was looking for Corn Hub.
Someone actually said that on Twitter, I noticed. And in fact, there is a Corn Hub. And it does have a faux Porn Hub look to it.
Okay, interesting. There is also Hub on Instagram, which is a great source of puns.
Well, what I was going to say is if you type tractor porn into Google...
I won't.
The first result is for Porn Hub.
You're joking.
Nope.
But that would also require someone to go out seeking it, which, again, I don't...
I mean, people do casually use... now, I'm accidentally watching... No, I'm not really. People do use porn as a... you know, like, how to describe it, you know, like, it's often used as a word, isn't it? You know, like,
Kate in our live chat says they've blatantly bid on that word today. That's a fair point.
It's actually, I will say, it's not an ad.
Oh, okay.
It's because I block all those. And in fact, Ghostery, I think, does a really good job of stripping ads out of Google search results. This is an organic result. They probably have bid on it. And the Cornhub people are probably having a riot.
I just don't know how possible it is to do that. I can imagine.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
you mentioned Imgur or Reddit or Twitter or something, and it is certainly possible, and this is part of what the Online Harms Bill has been about and all this other stuff, to accidentally fall victim to seeing something unpleasant that you weren't expecting. But if you are looking for something as famously unerotic as a tractor, then I find it difficult to know how that is the kind of keyword that would lead you to pornographic content. I remember when I was at Wired, we wrote a story about how Emma Watson was the most dangerous celebrity to Google just because of the sheer number of websites that purported to have photos of her nude, and therefore if you were to search for them, you would likely end up with malware on your computer, more so than if you Googled any other celebrity nudes.
Well, the BBC has a story on this with a video, which obviously I can't watch. It says it's only 16 seconds long. Neil Parish tractor search. Can see how it led to porn, says MP's friend. Devon County Councillor, friend of Neil Parish, Colin Slade, has said that he can see how searching for tractors on the internet could lead to a porn site. It comes after the disgraced MP made claims about he was came to be watching adult content in the House of Commons. You're just going to have to wait 16 seconds. Hold on.
I mean, something that does kind of leave us without much of an argument is that the MP did also tell the BBC, my crime, biggest crime, is that on another occasion I went in a second time. And that's not a euphemism. That is, it meant that he did it on purpose the second time in comments.
Yeah, I mean, he probably did it on purpose the first time. I don't know why he feels the need to say that. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's a shame. He admitted that the second time had been deliberate, yes, and that it had happened in the House of Commons while he was waiting to vote.
Here's a question, though. Absolutely, totally wrong. Was he on 4G or 5G? You know, like, if he was on the House of Commons Wi-Fi, they should be blocking that stuff, surely, as they're so into the idea of blocking everyone else's internet.
Probably wasn't on the Wi-Fi. Honestly, don't know what Wi-Fi they have in the Commons.
Oh, I'm sure they do have Wi-Fi. I mean, they're encouraged and allowed to use tablets and phones in the chamber these days after many years of not being allowed to.
I'd love to know what the SSID is for the Commons Wi-Fi, and even more so, I'd love to know how fast it is.
It's probably commons_Wi-Fi and something dull like that.
I might swing by. I'll swing by and see how close I can get and see if I can join the Wi-Fi. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
I reckon those stone walls are fairly effective at keeping the Wi-Fi inside, to be fair.
Maybe. I don't know.
It does have a lot of glass.
Well, we've all been there anyway, I think, waiting to cast a vote, only to be...
Someone will know. Someone will have been to the House of Commons and seen the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, probably lots of my colleagues who I can just ask... Monday morning, given that,
do that then.
They work there. Well, anyway, if you've been overcome by a lustful urge born from the sinful desires of the flesh, and accidentally looked at porn or tractor erotica, just remember there's a time and a place, and neither of them, it's neither lunchtime nor the House of Commons. So we'll see how this plays out. Before we move on, though, there was something else that Ian mentioned reading about, where this is a completely different subject now, that British Gas has averaged the cost of wattage from different manufacturers' models of product to work out how much vampire devices, electronic products in our homes, are using over the course of a year in terms of energy and cost, and they've averaged it out, and that it's something like £140 a year.
It's not true, though.
It's not true.
No, not true at all.
Why is it not true?
It's come from British Gas, so obviously it's a publicity thing. They're obviously trying to justify their own profit margins by saying that it's consumers' faults for leaving things like TVs on. In fact, the EU rules are quite specific that things with standby must use less than half a watt. And smart TVs get a slight exception, but it's still in the order of one or so watts. People have done maths on this and have calculated that, you know, most things you would struggle to get a few pounds of usage, and certainly £24 is not it. I think someone did a calculation that the thirstiest TV might be £5 or something like that.
On standby, it's just left on standby. Yeah. Remember,
yeah, left on standby. It's just nonsense. It's one of those things. I mean, we're all familiar with this concept of people doing surveys and that kind of stuff to generate publicity, and I think this is even more obnoxious in a way, because it comes at a time when people are genuinely struggling, and it's come from an energy company that has the power to make changes if it so desired.
But surely this is coming from the point of maybe turn things off in order to use less power.
Yes, that's fine. I've no problem with that. And you will save some money. The point is, I think, you know, there's a couple of issues going on here. First of all, that what I saw online had suggested that it had come from an American study, where America obviously has completely different rules on electricity usage and a completely different attitude to it, because, you know, America generates a lot of its own electricity. It's much cheaper there. You know, they worry less about it, and their devices are different, you know, a completely different setup. So yes, you know, that it's possible that in America that would be the case. You could save, but of course they're not paying the same rate of power. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to struggle to find the actual numbers related to it, but I can tell you that people, Martin Lewis has done something about it. People are just being misled here, and I'm not saying you shouldn't turn things off, and investing in some smart plugs to do that automatically when you go to bed is a really good idea. You could have a routine. You could say, device, switch everything off, and that would be great, and it, you know, that would reduce your risk of fire perhaps, which is nice. There's lots of good reasons to do it, and obviously saving any energy is worth doing, but it's just, if people think they're going to be saving £73 a year on a hi-fi system or the Skybox, they're deluding themselves.
Well, that's a bit more. Let's just go through some of the figures here. TV, these are the figures that British Gas worked out, averaging from different manufacturers. This is, so a TV, £24.61 a year is how much it will cost you over the course of a year to leave a TV on average on standby. A set-top box on Sky or Virgin Media could be £23.10. I'm going to cut the pence out because that's not as interesting. The games consoles are about £12. Computers are about £11. A microwave, £16. A shower, about a tenner. Washing machine, just under a fiver. Printer, just under £4. And a phone charger, just the phone charger itself, just over a pound. And that adds up in total, amongst some other things, to about £150 a year. I mean, that's a shame. I mean, EST, who is EST?
Saving Trust.
Oh, right. Said that between 9% and 16% of electricity consumed in homes is used to power appliances while they are in standby mode. And I don't know what the answer is here. Kate in live chat says, on Radio 2, they were talking about turning your Wi-Fi router off to save money. No chance. They suggesting we turn washing machines off at the plug? Because that's quite difficult to do. They're usually behind the washing machine.
They often are. And again, you know, yes, you know, get some smart plugs if you want. But again, that's not cheap. You're not going to... The way I look at this is always the same as I'd like to have solar panels fitted, but it's going to take me a very long time to recover any meaningful cost benefit to that. And am I going to be, you know, wasting more money and natural resources by doing it than are recoverable? It's very difficult to say to someone who's struggling for money, go and buy yourself a £20 smart plug and use that, when they probably don't have the money to do that. It's ridiculous. So the Energy Saving Trust said you could save a modest £35. This is from The Guardian, by turning off devices in standby. That's from a 2013 report.
Not insignificant, because that would feed, you know, you could feed a family for a week on £35 if you shop smartly.
Yes, yeah, you absolutely could. Yeah, and of course, again, there's nothing wrong with it. I will say this, it is not a great idea to turn off an OLED TV. Now, I will admit also that it's probably not... it's unlikely that people struggling to find money for an electricity bill would have an OLED TV. They are amongst the most expensive screens. But they also do things overnight where they do wear levelling and stuff like that. So they account for which pixels have been used the most and do some stuff to make sure that the panel wears evenly. And that happens when the TV is on standby. Plus, of course, you've got things auto-updating overnight when you're not using them, which is handy. And generally, the cost of that is relatively small. And I, like you, there's no way I'm turning off my router. I'm not going to shut off my Raspberry Pi, although I suppose I could, because actually I'm not using it overnight. But, you know, it's all a lot of effort to go to. And I'm not a big fan of shutting things down at the mains without actually shutting them down properly, which could cause further problems. But yes, you know, if you've got a microwave and all it's doing is showing you a clock and you think you can save a few pence, well, there's no harm turning it off at the wall, but you're not going to save the kind of money that the press were reporting. And unfortunately, that story is everywhere and has been challenged by very few places, which is very frustrating when you speak from a journalistic point of view.
Until now.
Well, we're only really doing what everyone else has said, but good stuff on Twitter.
We're not. I think we're providing a valuable service here. I'd say it's worth about £150. we brought it up in order to challenge it.
Yeah, the Guardian seems to be pretty much the only place that's actually done anything on that. So, yeah.
Nice bit of insight here from Kate in the live chat, listening live. At the end of the day, as with recycling and cutting emissions, etc., it's always blaming consumers and telling us to inconvenience ourselves for the greater good, when really the rising costs aren't our problem and the government needs to help people who can't afford it.
That's completely right. The report, by the way, is a 2015 one from the US National Research Defense Council.
Right. So different country and 7 years old.
An analysis on homes in California.
Right.
Where power is actually a big issue. They have a lot of rolling blackouts and such in California.
So what you're saying is that it's a big fat pile of irrelevance.
It is. I mean, I'm all for people thinking about it, but also... shout out, you know, the EU knew this was a problem and did something about it. And yes, you know, if you've got plugs plugged in, you know, little chargers and stuff, and you don't use them, there's no harm turning them off. But at the same time, you're not going to make yourself significantly more wealthy by doing it. And, you know, the energy companies are still taking you for a ride.
Okay. Well, fantastic. It's been a wonderful journey through the world of irrelevance and pointlessness. And indeed, coming up, we'll continue that thread talking about Nadine Dorries. But let us know any devices you have that you class as vampires by sending us an email, hello@uktechshow.com.
Well, we've already talked about the government's plans to privatise Channel 4 and put a stop to the licence fee, but the same white paper that's examining those idiotic ideas is also looking at how the government can regulate streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime. Currently, those streamers can pretty much show anything they like, as long as it doesn't break any actual laws. The plan to move them to a model regulated in the same way that normal TV channels are would mean that streamers would need to ensure that their documentaries are both accurate and fair, and that harmful material or offensive material isn't available. In practice, the legislation's probably quite unlikely to affect most streaming companies all that much. There's been no suggestion that they're flagrantly flouting broadcast rules, and commercial concerns will prevent them from offering, say, porn to MPs, and only the BBC's iPlayer is currently covered by the broadcast code, broadcaster's code, in fact, it's called. But the proposal would make a VOD code, video on demand, with similar rules. The proposal's being led by professional brick impersonator Nadine Dorries, who this week went on LBC to explain that Channel 4 had thrived since its privatisation a few years ago. Channel 5, it's important to note, has never been publicly owned. She may be thinking of when it was sold by Richard Desmond to Paramount, which is part of the CBS Corporation. Honestly, if you look at the Wikipedia page for Channel 5 ownership, you will click through about 10 different Paramount organisations trying to work out where it ends up. Anyway, it's Paramount UK and Australia in this country. Interesting, the white paper isn't all that bad. There's a proposal to do something about streaming rights for sporting events too, which upset the British public during the most recent Olympics. The BBC had limited access because digital rights were sold to Discovery, and there's a plan to clean that up, which is probably good news. Nate, yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, I was reading about this quite a lot this week, and the thing that intrigues me is how this would be enforced, right? So the idea is that if you take a program that has been controversial or received complaints or something, Goop, the Gwyneth Paltrow documentary, like, famously received a lot of complaints for promoting things that were,
yes, that should be banned,
claimed to be unethical. But the thing is like, well, what would a service like Netflix have to do like this? Would it be where you take it down, because that seems a bit
just block it from viewing in the UK, I would imagine.
But that seems too much. And that's from someone who doesn't like pseudoscience BS. If it was a graphic images or something, you would have a disclaimer pop up that says, you know, these claims have been challenged, or something that shows up in a lower third or what have you. That feels, at least then, you're not saying, well, you can't watch this, because you might want to watch it because it's a steaming pile of horse waste. Yeah. And being told, well, you can't watch it because it's been challenged. Well, that doesn't help. I am not a fan of astrology and homeopathy, but that doesn't mean that I don't want to watch a documentary about it.
No, but I think that comes under balance, doesn't it? It's like, if they could do that, if they were then to do, I mean, doing what you said, having a lower third that says this is a nonsense claim, or, you know, this claim has not been substantiated, would kind of cover it. Or they could have interviews with other people that would, say, well, actually, the science behind this is zero. That wouldn't work for Goop, because it is essentially just a marketing video for Gwyneth Paltrow. Now, you could argue that it might be deemed as an advertorial and would be actually not allowed at all.
But it isn't, is it? I mean, it is. It's presented as an editorial. It's presented as a documentary.
But the fact that it isn't challenged at all by actual science suggests that it isn't, and that is in fact just an advertorial for Gwyneth Paltrow and her vagina rocks.
Have you seen any of these UFO documentaries on Amazon and Netflix?
I'm not interested.
I've watched loads of them, and they're hilarious because of how absolute...
I don't find them hilarious. I find them to be a massive waste of time and an annoyance, frankly.
But they're not really challenged that much. It's obviously a load of rubbish. It's obviously stupid, but it's not challenged. Maybe it doesn't matter because it's about little green men rather than...
It's not going to affect anyone's health, I would say. Whereas some of the things that Gwyneth Paltrow has said, and I'm very, very anti Gwyneth Paltrow and her stupid organisation for this reason, are actively harmful. But then you could say that these little UFO videos might be harming someone's mental health. If someone then goes on and thinks that there's a global conspiracy to cover up the presence of lizard people, you know, those conspiracies don't lead to good places. And if you're, you know... what's the best way? If you're mentally fragile in a way that leads you to be susceptible to these claims, then it could be harmful. You could, you know, destroy your life.
You do know that it's not lizard people, it's crab people.
Is it crab people?
And I genuinely believe that there are crab people.
Okay, well, that's fine.
It's pretty clear that the governments of the world are run by crab people.
They're not
crab. Basically, it's lots of crabs in a suit acting as a person, dressed as a person.
A trench coat.
You could call it a trench coat, yeah. They have a different
three
word.
Three crabs in a trench coat.
They have a different word for it, yeah. There's a lot of very compelling evidence that's accurate.
Sure. I mean, actually, and you've triggered something here, which I suspect you didn't intend to do. But it also goes back to some of the arguments made about the BBC, where people say, oh, you know, the BBC goes out of its way to get on, you know, people. So, for example, there are some things in the world that aren't up for debate. Like, you can't argue that there isn't racism, and you can't argue, well, you can argue that the world is flat, but there's no evidence to suggest the world is flat. But environmental concerns, for example, most scientists, reputable scientists, agree that the Earth is undergoing climate change because of the people on it. Of course, we all know that the world goes through its own climate cycle anyway, but we are having an impact on it. Now, that's pretty much as factual as science gets. Everyone's pretty happy with that. But the BBC, say, for example, would have someone on to say, well, actually, there's no climate change. And that's an argument, because what they think they're doing is providing balance. But they're not actually doing that. They're just giving crazy people an opportunity to talk nonsense. And that's unfair. I don't mean crazy people. I mean people with an agenda. Mm. So, you know, there comes a point where there is no balance. That something is either true or false. And even science sometimes gets to the point where it's prepared to say, actually, we think this is a fact. I mean, obviously, science is a very movable thing by its very nature. But, you know, you see what I'm saying. It's not possible. Sometimes it's possible to overbalance something when there is no need. So it is difficult. And it's one of the things that causes the most problems, because actually, on the whole, things don't fit into little neat boxes. You know, the spectrum of truth is far wider than just yes or no. Anyway,
profound, mate. Pretty profound. And you can see why flat earthers do often think they're correct, because they print out all of their evidence, and paper is famously flat.
I think that's, in that's fairness,
part of the problem.
I find flat earthers as entertaining as you find the little green men people, because their explanation of how there's an ice wall at the end of the flat earth, and that's why no one's allowed to go to the Antarctic or Arctic, I do find that very entertaining. It is a very, very complicated way of pretending that the Earth is flat, when in fact many of us have seen the curvature of the Earth with our own eyes, and there is bountiful video footage of the Earth from space.
Yeah.
Which they would argue is not real.
They may. And if you are one of those, feel free to let us know. Send us an email, crabpeople@uktechshow.com.
Will that work or not? Is that a valid email address?
They can send it in. Crabs, and indeed all crustaceans, are welcome to email the show. But bear in mind, we might not read it out, because we do have a clause in our contract that prohibits us from peddling BS. But if you have human hands, please feel free to type with your fingers or fists hello@uktechshow.com.
Somewhere out there, there's three crabs in a trench coat getting very angry about this.
And here is Nadine Dorries. Just want to quickly thank some patrons. We actually have a load of people listening live. We have Charlotte, Guthman, Ian B, Camille, Kate, Luna, Mike. I'm not going to include myself. Rich.
Don't include me either.
Quite a few other people earlier been dipping.
I'm definitely not listening.
Dipping in and out. So thanks for those people who have increased their pledge, including Guthman, actually. Thank you, mate. And you can join them, get the full version of text message, ad-free. You can join our live audience. We talk about all the time. Get our sister show extra message. The complete archive of unedited back catalogue episodes, on demand, whatever. There's a lot of stuff on offer there. Patreon.com/UK Tech. And if you're one of those people, you're about to hear this week's fourth discussion story, actually, all about a woman stuck in a toilet. Got a bit of feedback since the last episode. We talked about the inflatable car comment at the top of the show, but we had another one coming from Mike, who said, "Hi, Nate and Ian. One thing I'm surprised subscription-based services don't do is offer discounts or price lock-ins to stay subscribed. Mm. If you cancel or let your subscription lapse, you lose your discount and have to pay the current price to resubscribe."
I think that's a really good idea.
That's a good point. A loyalty bonus, basically. Oh, Guthaman in live chat says Now TV does that. Okay.
Didn't know that. I'm not going to subscribe to Now TV. I mean, not that I object, but I have Sky, so there's not really any point. But
that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
It is.
You get, like, you know, a 1 year loyalty bonus. I mean, lots of people do. A lot of podcasts do that.
Hey,
yeah, Nick. In,
well, now you know.
Nick in the chat also
says
saying
that now.
Some subscriptions will only will offer a deal after you've cancelled. I mean, certainly
yeah,
a lot of
true.
Services will offer you discounts if you threaten to cancel. Sometimes you just need to dangle the threat of disconnection in front of their faces, and they'll offer you a great package.
Now you're going to get asked if we do a Patreon discount for long term subscribers. Perhaps we should.
We could. But we don't.
Is there any functionality built in? Because I'm aware that most of the problems with Patreon are baked in.
No, you can do it. But again, it's one of these problems where you need to be on a monthly or annual subscription model, which we don't do, in order to make sure we don't charge people for weeks we don't do a show. So it becomes a little more difficult to do that. But if people would really like that, then you know what to do. Let us know. hello@uktechshow.com.
However, I
simply must move on, Ian, because it's very important that we get to hear from Tom Merritt and find out what's been happening in his world of tech news this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, our first look at Europe's Digital Services Act. Dr. Kiki helps us understand how to recharge batteries that have been implanted inside of human beings. Patrick Norton breaks down the details of Apple's new self-repair program, how to make a video meeting good for brainstorming, Snapchat's new self-piloting drone, yes, I said Snapchat, and why chip shortages have been good for the Xbox but bad for nearly every other tech company. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
We have a real chip shortage in our kitchen at the moment. I don't buy them anymore. I make them out of potatoes using a mechanical potato chip maker.
And according to you, so does the pub down the road from you.
Yeah, the only pub in Britain that honestly ran out of chips on an evening.
I do think that's brilliant.
Ridiculous. Go and look at The Crown's reviews. The Crown, Broxbourne, TripAdvisor. Some great reviews. Sometimes it's best to just ask when you order food from them, rather than asking them what you want, ask them what they haven't got, and then picking something they have. And even then, there's no guarantee you're going to get it. You know, they've run out of chips. They ran out of all kinds of beer. It's almost funny. And in fact, it is funny. I think my mum has it bookmarked so she can go and read the latest reviews. Pretty terrible.
Very good.
Pretty not terrible is DTNS. So thank you, Mr. Tom Merritt. Ian, do you have anything else you'd like to add at this juncture?
No.
Do you want to think of something that you might say if you did have something to say?
Yes.
Go on.
Wonder if YouTube would be subject to those rules on broadcasters, because that would be interesting, wouldn't it? If they had to be impartial and fair. That basically wipes out 2/3 of YouTube.
Probably only if you're paying a subscription. Also, there's got to be a decision as to who counts as a streamer, and I believe it is up to the culture secretary, which is currently Nadine Dorris, to make a call on who is subject to the rules. So
YouTube better hope she doesn't pick on them, because they're gonna have, that's gonna be problematic.
Yeah, it would be. Well, we'll come back to that next week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do consider giving us a review on iTunes. We had a lovely one last week, and it would be great to get some more. Also, if you've been listening for a while and would like to step up and become a supporter, get extra message, get our live streams, join us and chat with us all through the week, as so many lovely people do, go to patreon.com/UK Tech. We would love to have you, particularly since we lost a couple of people recently. So it'd be quite nice to get some people back. I have nothing else to add, though, Ian. I hope you have a wonderful Bank Holiday Monday.
Ooh.
Take care, everybody, and remember, crab people.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.